This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Well, hi there, and thank you so much, Parker. I'm your host, Jim Irvin, and this is Time Signatures. Earlier this year, I had the pleasure of attending a concert featuring blues legends Taj Mahal and Keb Mo during their 2025 Taj Mo Room on the Porch tour. It made a stop in Grand Rapids, Michigan at the Frederick Meyer Gardens Amphitheater, and it was an amazing evening, I have to tell you. I received a press credential to shoot the show, and I was told to look for a young lady by the name of Anne from Chicago who happened to be playing with the band. Now, I was told, you're going to love her when you meet her. And I did get a chance to meet Anne as she made her way to the stage. And I was spellbound as I watched her command her violin during the entire performance. She played with brilliance, passion, and sincerity. And I have to tell you, I think I watched her as much as I did Taj and Keb. It was a blast. It really was. Ladies and gentlemen, don't call her a blues musician. She is a world-class musician. Anne Harris, welcome to Time Signatures. How are you?
Oh, I am so well, and thank you so much for having me, Jim. I'm honored to be here, and I am overwhelmed by your very generous introduction. I would only add that some of the best world-class musicians that I know are blues musicians as well. So, yeah, the genre is thriving, alive and well, and I'm just honored to be able to weave in and be a small part of it.
And physically weave in, because I've seen you on stage, girl. You are all over the place. As a matter of fact, I just caught your thank you to the big blues vendor in Vegas, and Laura Carbone got one of the greatest shots of you and Danielle Nicole together while you were doing the big deep bend.
Wow. Laura Carbone, she is a magical photographer. And, you know, I feel like the photographers are just as important and an important part of the revelation of blues as promoters and producers and anyone else, really, because they're able to capture moments. And obviously, the photographs that we see of people that are no longer with us become so valuable in keeping their spirits alive and their legacies alive. And blues is a genre of legacy, to be certain.
Yes, absolutely. And I have to tell you, I'm jealous of her because I don't suppose that they were under the same restrictions that we were in Grand Rapids. We were allowed the first three songs.
You were
just warming up, girl. You hadn't even started stretching yet, so I didn't get that deep bend, you know? But anyway.
Yeah, it's unfortunate they do that. You know, I guess there's a good friend of mine who's a photographer, Paul Natkin. I don't know if you know him.
I know
he's
the name,
Chicago-based. Paul's been around a very long time, and he's shot icons like Keith Richards and Bob Marley and many other people. And he has, you know, a book of his work and great, great stories. And he's a great storyteller. And that whole three song thing didn't used to be the case, as you probably are aware. It used to be. And luckily, it's not the case with some of these festivals, like the Big Blues Bender, who has, you know, photographers that they sanction and they trust and they have a relationship with, and they're part of the team, because that festival realizes the importance of really capturing magic. But what you captured in your short amount of time was so beautiful. And
thank you.
Jim,
thank
I just got to thank you for your work, because like I said, it's not a lot of people were going to be able to make those few shows on that Taj Mo run this past spring. But
and what an honor. That was such a cool show, man. That's the first time I've seen all three of you. And
Oh,
I have to tell you,
wow.
yeah, I have to tell you, I think I saw the best show. I really do.
Oh,
So.
wow. Well, Myers Gardens, the show that you were at, what an amazing facility. We had beautiful
Yes.
weather, as you know, that day, and I
Yes.
spent the afternoon after sound check walking around those gardens and just seeing people coming in, with their chairs and their little picnic snacks and ready for a good night of music. And I got to tell you, the experience of touring with two legends, with Taj Mahal and Keb Mo, and their incredible band and production team, it was truly a family. And when they contacted me and we were discussing the contracts and getting down to the offer, I was told very wisely by Kevin's manager, Adrienne Miller. She said, "We have one rule. If you're going to join this team, it's the no act rule. If you're an act, you can't be on this tour." And I'm like, I love you guys so much. And if I am ever an act, please fire me immediately. And it wasn't just talk. That tour was truly an experience of a lifetime, because every single person involved on every level of production, through all the musicians, of course, and management, really, we were a team wanting the best for the fans, the best for the music, and to really support Taj, whose legacy is, both
Yes.
of them are iconic. But it was like,
Yes.
we Taj is a griot, and Kevin is one of his disciples. I didn't know about their relationship. And I'll tell you about that if you're not aware of it after I finish this very winded thought already. Just the fact that it really was a team family effort, and it was an honor to work with people that are so just want the highest good for the biggest picture. As a often hired side musician, that's always my goal. I always say a little prayer to the goddess of rock before I perform, that I can really serve the music to the best of my ability, serve the musicians around me, creating this tapestry together to the best of our collective ability. And may I serve in a capacity of delivering to whoever's watching and a part of it, an experience that's hopefully uplifting in some way. And their catalog is, they are as musicians, they are as people. And I'm so glad you got to see that, especially as your first time seeing Taj and Kevin. What a great gateway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I have to tell you, my husband and I had such a blast. We really did. And it
Beautiful.
was an experience. And even the guy that opened for you, Abraham, is that it?
Oh,
Help me out.
Alexander,
Oh, my
Abraham
God.
Alexander, he
Yeah.
is stunning. And if you go down the rabbit hole of discovering him, following on his social media, you'll see that he's been doing it for a very long time, and he's ascending now. He's entering his time, and deservedly so. Another beautiful human, another
And it was,
incredibly talented
yeah.
artist.
And it was served up to us like a 10-course meal, and it just kept getting better and better. And I'm not just saying that because you're here. Honestly, I don't believe in brown nosing or anything like that. I truly enjoyed every element of that concert. It was wonderful. It was a great memory. So
I am
let's
so glad to hear that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's get moving with the questions, man. We're sitting here having a good time talking. But as I understand it, your passion for the violin started when you were just 3 years old. And I would love to hear that story, Anne.
It's such a great story. My mom took my sister and I to see the film version of Fiddler on the Roof when I was three. And I have a vague memory of kind of what the screen looked like. And my mother told me that during the opening, where Isaac Stern is in silhouette playing his violin into the overture of that incredible score, I stood up and pointed at the screen, and I was like, "Mommy, that's what I want to do. That's what I want to do." And she was like, "Okay, shh, quiet, sit down." We checked out the movie. I loved it, but I kept bugging her about the violin. I want to play the violin. That's what I want to do. I want to play the violin. And it wasn't until I was 8 that I actually started formal professional lessons. She did a couple of like entree things with summer camp, you know, experiences. I was very fortunate to grow up at a time. I'm from a very small hippie college town in southwestern Ohio called Yellow Springs.
Okay.
And the college is Antioch College. So it's an extremely liberal utopia. When we were kids, we nicknamed our town Whoville, some of us, you know, from the Grinch, because it really, you know, it was a beautiful place to grow up. And the time frame in which I grew up as well, funding for the arts was still a thing. And we were so fortunate to have this woman by the name of Shirley Mullins, who passed just about a month ago, at the ripe old age of, I think she was 90. She was a cellist. She was a staunch supporter of the arts and of music. She started the music program in that public school system kind of single-handedly.
Wow.
And it turned into an award-winning program, you know, the artists and the musicians that came up through those ranks. It was such a gift, and she was such a gift to the planet. And so, you know, my interest in the instrument was the first spark, but without, you know, kindling and wood, a fire can't really begin. And those other elements are our teachers, our supporters, our early,
yes,
fellow, you know, artists or musicians that give each other words of support or encouragement or bring us into a whole new path of learning and development. And obviously this isn't just apply to music, but that's what we're talking about. And that was my journey. So, through her, through Shirley Mullins, who started the orchestra program and began this incredible journey for our town and all the students that came through it. She gave me some of my first lessons, and I got a student teacher, and then I got who would become my, teacher of Mary Schumacher, who is passed on as well, my longtime violin teacher of 10 years. And I studied with her classical music, Suzuki method. But I was always listening to all kinds of music, because all kinds of music was being played in my house. And I was, you know, going through my sister's record collection of rock records and listening to funk stations. And at the same time, got interested in theater and dance. And so all of those elements, I think, came into play into sort of forming the artist that I'm still developing into. Hopefully you keep developing as long as you're creating. So, yeah.
Well, I want to ask you, I have no doubt that your earliest instructor got to see you do well. What did she say when she discovered how well you were doing on the world stage?
Well, she actually, my teacher, Mary Schumacher, my violin teacher, she passed years before I made it to really performing on the worldwide stage, unfortunately. But she did see the beginning of my ascension just doing local Chicago things.
Okay.
And she was just so proud that I was continuing to play. I mean, it was sort of like her dream that her students always have the instrument in their life. And Shirley Mullins, who was the orchestra director, who recently passed, she was able to follow my journey a lot longer. And was very proud. And I, again, am so grateful that I had these strong women in my life kind of beginning, lighting the fire underneath me and ushering me into what would be the first steps of my musical journey.
Sure. Now, I understand that playing the violin takes a lot of study and practice to truly master the instrument. I wanted to talk to you about after those early ties to fiddler, were there other violin players that inspired you as well?
It's so interesting. Like obviously, you know, I studied classical when I was growing up, and it wasn't until I moved to Chicago and Chicago became home that I started picking up the instrument with the intention to learn fiddling and not read written music. So the influences that I had as a kid growing up, like Itzhak Perlman and Isaac Stern, were like the masters of sure. the classical form, which was never the direction that I intended to, you know, pursue professionally. I was never like, oh, I got to audition for an orchestra. You know, I was always a bit weird. In fact, I must say that my teacher, Mary Schumacher, you know, I remember one of her comments at my lessons was like, don't move around so much. You have to stay still when you play. So the whole track that I was on didn't end up being the track that I would pursue professionally, which is, you know, this whole other thing. It was it was classical music. And so it wasn't really until I started working in the, you know, pop and rock and blues and, you know, American roots, I'll say, sure. that umbrella encompasses all those fiddling styles. And it wasn't until I started stepping out of the classical box intentionally to step into my life as a fiddle player that I started seeking out other players, you know, players like Regina Carter, players like Sugarcane Harris, players like Papa John Creech, and then some of the great Irish players as well, you know, and country players, Alison Krauss, sure. incredible, known for her voice, obviously, but she was a award-winning bluegrass fiddle player, you know, before yes. she got into that. But so I would say the people that I was really, you know, admiring for their fiddle playing specifically, the main influences were Papa John Creech and Sugarcane Harris. And it's not that I wanted to emulate their playing, because no one can. They were geniuses of the instrument and of many genres, masters as well. I just wanted to embody their sense of adventure, I think, is the best way I would put it.
Okay. Okay. Now, I understand that you have your first violin yet. We're not going to talk about the new one yet. We will talk about it, I promise you, because I want to hear the story. But how cool is it that you still have that first full-size violin? Not many musicians keep their first of anything, but you did. It's a beautiful 1961 Roth. I have to ask, did you have a name for that one?
No, it's so funny. I do get asked that question, and I never... Okay. I never gave my OG fiddle a formal name, but I do feel like it has a male leaning energy to it.
Okay.
I don't know if that means anything, you know, a masculine sort of vibe, but both of my violins and my other violin that we'll get to later has more of a feminine leaning vibe, but they're both. They're powerful voices, and I think it was the Roth has, you know, it's a voice that, being as old as that instrument is now, it's developed over the years, and and it served me so well. It continues to its performance in live scenarios as well as recorded ones, its consistency. There's just a vibe, you know, describing why a musician likes a certain instrument is, it's difficult, you know, words only get so far, because it comes down to this realm beyond language, which is feeling, and how the instrument makes you feel, how the vibrations, through the wood and my resonance with those vibrations feels in my body, you know.
What a great transition to my next question. You call your connection to the violin a conduit to a very spiritual place, and I would love to have you talk about that.
Yeah, you know, for me, there are many conduits, and every single person has accessibility in myriad ways, some that we're aware of and some that we might not even be aware of yet. There's this, I guess, what I strive to do in performance, when I know I'm going to be authentically honest in how I'm performing and what I'm interpreting, it's when I enter the present moment of what I'm doing, which is a form of meditation. Meditation is simply awareness of the present, which is an infinite field of possibility. And being an improvisational player, that's where I go. And a tool for one person meditating might be holding crystals or playing a singing bowl or burning incense or whatever. And for me, one accessibility point to the realm of what is eternal and timeless is through music. And my tool to enter that realm is through my violin, you know, and through my voice as well, and my body. They're all connected when I'm having the experience of being a conduit.
You want to hear something funny? As I was preparing for this interview, I always try to go and listen to the music of the people that I'm getting ready to talk to. I had never heard you sing before. So here I am going through your music and I went, wow, I'm really enjoying this. So I had a good time listening to some of your music, but I would like
to
turn... You're welcome. I'd like to turn the page, Anne, because a few years ago, you met a young African-American woman named Amanda Ewing from Nashville. She is a violin maker or a luthier. And from that chance encounter came a decision to commission her to create for you a custom violin. I want to turn the floor over to you because I've seen the video and post. I've got to hear this story from you.
Yeah, it was really wild. It was coming out of pandemic and I was going through my scroll on the gram and the algorithm brought me this photograph of this beautiful Black woman holding a violin in her work coat. She was a luthier and it was a title story. It was a picture of a feature story that she had done. And I was blown away because up until that point, I had never with my own eyes seen a Black woman luthier, violin maker featured in a story. And I was obsessed. I'm like, I have to find out more about her. How did she get into luthery? Who is this amazing person? So I went down the rabbit hole of Amanda Ewing and connected with her, messaged her, tried not to scare her with my stalking because I was obsessed. And she was lovely. And I just felt this drive, you know, for a couple of years before I met Amanda, I was considering getting another violin in addition to my original violin, the Roth, just to have another voice kind of in my arsenal. I sometimes record multi-tracks of my violin for, you know, records and for people and for myself, and to have just another texture voice, you know, to expand that. And since I had had my first violin, since I grew into a full-size violin, you know, I've just been curious of like another voice might be fun to play around with, but it never occurred to me to commission somebody until I saw Amanda. And then it was just sort of unfolded for me that I had to have her make me an instrument. And then, you know, fully realizing also that we would be the first official, because as I got in conversation with her and got to know her better, I kept asking her, you are the only accredited Black violin luthier that you know of? And she said, it's the craziest thing. There are many, many other makers, and there have been many makers through time. You know, the people that have to restore instruments or take care of them as they get damaged,
Sure.
or, you know, create them. But in terms of being put on record as a Black woman, there had not been any before her. And she was
Cool.
Officially recognized by the state of Tennessee. You know, she's done, the more she searched, she's like, surely I can't be the first. That's crazy. It's 2023. You know, how is that possible? And she realized she actually is. So once we began this journey of her commissioning me an instrument, that was what the journey was about, that this was the very first time in documented U.S. history that
Wow.
two Black professional women, luthier, violin maker, and violinist, collaborated together on a professional commission. And so we, you know, I am a poor artist, and I used crowdfunding. I used GoFundMe to hopefully help me not go into debt over the instrument. And the story really resonated with people, and the violin was completely crowdfunded, and GoFundMe
Wow.
was fascinated by the story and elevated our platform and gave, you know, we were guest stars on a podcast, and we were chosen as Artists of the Month for Black Music Month of June of that year when we started the commission. I think that was 23, because it's been
Okay.
a couple years in the making. So anyway, fast forward. So she began the commission in the late summer of 23. It turned out that instead of one, she made me two violins so that I would have a choice. The luthier she studied underneath told her, always make two so that your client has a choice. And
No kidding.
They were completed at the beginning of this year in late January, in February, mid-February is when I got the fiddles. And I played
Wow.
on them for about a month. And that's the time when, out of the blue, I got the call from Kebmo and Taj Mahal to join their Room on the Porch tour, which would be that spring, you know.
Yeah.
And that the very first show of that tour would be an appearance at the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville. And so I knew I would bring this new violin out into the world. That would be her official first public performance
Man.
for the new violin. And that's the violin I was playing on for that tour. And just to know that our ancestors must be smiling.
I'm smiling. What are you kidding me?
Exactly. I mean, especially I think at a time in this country where marginalized voices are being suppressed, and there is a narrative of fear and division, and there is an attempt for suppression and rewriting history, I think it's really important for anyone that maybe doesn't fit into the mainstream narrative in some way, contribute their stories and get them out so that other people that feel maybe alone or on the edges, maybe have a sense of belonging in some sort of small way.
Well, and
I
I
don't
have
know if
to,
that makes sense to you.
it,
Or...
it does. And I have to tell you, I'm a very firm, staunch supporter of the female musicians. I met Joanna Connor a couple of years ago, and
Oh, I love her.
I heard the story about how she was marginalized and shoved to the corner, and you
Yeah.
know, and if she dared say anything, she was told she was being bitchy and overbearing. And
Yeah.
so when I started this podcast, which was shortly after I met her, I decided that I wanted to have equal access to male and female musicians. I had to tie their story to the blues in some way, because this is presented by the Capital Area Blues Society. But I've been very thankful, because I'm now working with Michelle Seidman. And as I understand it, you are the first Women of the Blues Gallery poster girl, according to Lynn Orman. And
Yes.
She absolutely loves you. And
I love Lynn.
I just think that it's wonderful when I hear stories like this. I don't care if it's male or female. But when it's female, it's a little extra special, isn't it?
Well, I think
because
it's
of that
just,
marginalization.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone has a story that would break your heart, you know, and I feel like when it comes down to it, I think just about everyone can point to a time in their life or something about them that's made them feel not part of the mainstream, excluded in some way. And so, you know, shining a light on any group that, you know, as a group has that experience, I think touches anyone that has that experience, no matter where you align or how, you know, who you are. So, yeah.
That's cool. That's cool. Now, from concept to delivery, you're talking a couple of years. Have you named this one?
I haven't.
I thought you would have.
A nickname that did come to mind is Honey. And I know that's so simple, but like when I remember opening the cases when they arrived on my kitchen floor, I was so excited, you know, ripped open the boxes and carefully lifted out the case and carefully unzipped it. And, you know, I had these two beautiful violins and the varnish that Amanda used, the finish on both of the fiddles and on particularly the way it glows through the wood of the violin I chose. It's like honey. It's like, you know, looking at honey. But I you know, naming, I'm bad at names.
Yeah, but honey is a good one. It's simple, but at the same time, yeah. I've seen photos and I've seen it in person. Yes. So I understand the tie. I wanted to ask you before we move on here, was Amanda able to be at that first concert in Nashville?
Yes, she was.
Man.
She's a Nashville native, actually. Yeah. So that's her home. And so she was there, and Weekend Edition, Debbie Elliott's Weekend Edition on NPR, she randomly heard about this story through my publicist and happened to be in Nashville the same week. So she was also there and
got to do an
interview with Amanda and I for NPR and a Weekend Edition together after seeing the morning after seeing the violin in performance with Taj Mahal. It's been a wild year for me, I must say.
I can imagine.
I am so very grateful for so much of the wonderful things I've experienced so far this year. It's been quite a year.
Indeed. Now I have to go back to the concert in Grand Rapids for a moment. Seeing you for the first time with Taj Mahal was an incredible experience. As I told you earlier, you play with such fervor in those deep back bends, man. I'd be falling on my butt if I tried that, but you do that regularly, don't you?
Well, I would be falling on my butt if I thought about it, probably, but I'm just like into what I'm doing at the moment. So I'm not even thinking about, you know, the possibility of falling or making a fool of myself. Obviously, I've got no shame. So I'm just, you know, I'm caught up in the music and I love dancing, and I express my joy and and all of the myriad of emotions of that music brings through me, through my first instrument, which is obviously my body.
You know, we were talking about this before we got going about the Blues Bender, just last September.
Yeah.
Looking at the date that we're recording
weekend.
This. Well, the date that we're recording this versus the date that it's going to air is going to be a little bit of a time frame. But I have to tell you, that video of you and Danielle Nicole is so powerful. And the chemistry between the two of you, talk about that moment, if you would.
Well, I've been, Danielle's a dear friend of mine. I've known her for many years. We met years ago. I think probably the first time it was probably on one of the blues cruises.
Okay.
And I've watched her, I mean, from the moment I saw her I knew she was something really special and an artist that any chance I would ever have to see her, I would. And through the years watching her develop into the absolute force of nature that she is now is an honor. And I've just been a champion supporter and friend of hers for a while. And, you know, whenever we're kind of in each other's radiuses, you know, we'll try to do something together. And she's played through Chicago area where I live, and I've sat in with her. And I think we did a song together at last year's Big Blues Bender. And I wanted to collaborate with her again this year. And I was like, you know, there's not an overwhelming amount of women on that festival. And I really wanted us to fuse our energy and really just blast out something
it.
That would just, something that was really cool and fun. And her band, you know, Brandon Miller's incredible. And her, they're an incredible band, incredible elite band leader in her. And to join forces with her is an honor beyond words. I love her so much. And that moment was just about our sheer joy at like going up there and doing what we get to do. We're so lucky. You know, we get to play with our friends and make cool stuff that people like and get moved by, and it was just I think I reached out to her a week or two prior going, hey, you're gonna be in Vegas, I'm gonna be there too, let's do something. And a week later, because she was on the road, she got back, she's like, hell yes, this will be great, let's do this song, and here's a link to the video, but all you need to know is like have a good time or something like that. And that's what we did.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to make sure to put a link up here because people need to see this. Truly.
Please do. Appreciate that.
And it seemed like Danielle is, you know, like you said, incredibly gifted anyway, but you two seem to feed off of each other organically. It was just something that was just this huge crescendo built in the song. And you went into your solo, and it's like, next thing you know, she's doing the back band, and Danielle's back here leaning back with the bass and just belting it out, man.
Yeah. But yeah.
What an experience.
Those are those moments when, you know, again, you know, we never rehearsed that song. You know, I heard a track, you know, there's no rehearsals in rock and roll, man. We just, you know, I love her. I trust her. She loves me and trusts me. And I knew what the moment was going to call for when I was in it, you know, and it's an amazing song and it's a journey. And she's such
Indeed.
A compelling storyteller. All I needed to do is like, you know, be right there, be present. And again, that speaks to what I was saying earlier about music being a form of meditation for me anyway, that it really is something that brings me into the present moment, because you can't pull out those kinds of unrehearsed performances without trusting the moment, trusting the people you're with, and really pulling from a space of love, of like, and joy, and just like, I'm just in this. And I'm going to make mistakes, and maybe I will fall on my ass this time when I beg. I don't know. But if I'm not going to think about anything but where I'm at, which is the journey of that song, the moment of, you know, that performance and playing off of the energy, you know, of your fellow band members.
Indeed. And you truly are a world-class musician. Your talents are not only on the violin, but rumor has it the guitar and mandolin are well-documented as well. In fact, you are such an in-demand musician, speaks volumes about you on a personal level as well. When you're not gracing the stage somewhere or promoting some of your own work, what kind of hobbies keep your interest these days?
Gosh, I love gardening. So being in Chicago, we get from like April through early October. So I'm looking at the end of a beautiful garden season, but you know, I love coming home and getting in and weeding and picking, you know, now we're up to our elbows in tomatoes and I'm making pesto every night. It's amazing. I know it's going to come crashing to a halt soon, but I do love gardening. I love reading. I'm kind of a nerd. I work out, do a lot of yoga. I love cooking. I'm about to get some dinner started in here. Hanging out with my friends, seeing live music, listening to music, and I like writing as well. So, you know, I try to keep journals handy. And I also have kind of a side gig in the cooler months where I have a whipped body butter formulation that I created during the pandemic called Radical Self-Love. So during my off time from on stage this time of year, I'm starting to whip up for the oncoming winter and fall cooler, drier air here in Chicago. And I sell that through my website. So yeah, body butter. If you haven't tried, I can send you some.
That'd be wonderful. Absolutely. And we'll make sure that we put a link up so that people can check it out and give it a sample if they'd like to. How about anything exciting coming up that we should know about in the new year, Anne, as we look forward to 2026?
Let's see. I have a band with Marcellus Simeon that I'm very proud of called Magnolias. And there'll be a record from us, our debut record for this project coming out in 2026. We're playing at Black Americana Fest in New Orleans coming up here in a couple of weeks. So I'm excited about that. I'm going to be in Spain for the bigger part of November with a band called Cracker. They're an amazing indie rock band from the 90s that many might remember. And I've begun touring with Cracker. So I've got more great shows coming up with them. And I am going to be working on recording some new music of my own, in 2026 as well. So yeah. And, I should also mention, I play regularly with JP Soares, and we have a band called the Gypsy Blue Review, which is sort of like, gypsy music meets blues music meets, there's a little bit of Americana and rock in there. It's a really cool project, and we recorded a record in upstate New York this past June that we're mixing right now. So that's going to be on the lookout for that in 2026. And my band, I'm naming so many things, the easiest thing is probably to go to my website, but I have another blues rock band I'm in called Halo Rider with Marcus James, and we're going to be releasing new music. So lots of new music is coming up for me to get out in the world in 2026, as well as more touring around the country and the world.
Well, as everyone that has been on this program knows, anytime that you have an album you want to promote or a tour you want to promote from this point forward, we've got a microphone here for you. Just reach out. We'll get you on and do a promotional episode and help promote whatever you're doing. So
That's awesome.
The most important part of this interview comes now. Where can we send people to learn more about you, maybe buy some CDs or merch, or to book you for a gig?
Please visit me at annanneharris.com for, you know, tour schedule, for contact info, for inquiries of any kind, and for links to the fun stuff that I've got going on, and also links to my body butter, and all of that can be found on my website, and links to my socials as well, of course.
Well, Anne Harris, it has been such a pleasure to have you. I want to thank you for joining me today on Time Signatures, and I wish you all the best in the coming new year. Safe travels, and I hope to see you soon.
Thank you so much for having me. Such an honor to be here, Jim.
And that brings us to the end of this episode of Time Signatures. Once again, my thanks to our guest, Anne Harris, but also to you, for without you, none of this would be possible. Jim Irvin reminding you, keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues one story at a time is my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Ervin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.